Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. As an avid listener, or even if you've just become a new one, you know I'm a marketer. A fractional marketer, in fact. A CMO. And while I've had many internal marketers on the show before, I've never had an independent marketer, similar, maybe not quite the same, on my show until now. So today at the cafe, I've invited Seth Avergon of Avergon Marketing Group to talk war stories, the good, the bad, the ugly, to hopefully provide some insights on what to do and what not to do when it comes to planning your marketing strategies and tactics. Seth, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. It's going to be fun. So usually what we do is to get things going, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and about your company?
So I started Avergon Marketing Group back in 2009. I spent the first half of my marketing career on the corporate side, working with some big brands, getting some great experience, just learning with some terrific mentors. And then in 2009, I decided to go out on my own to focus more on small and medium-sized businesses and helping them organize and develop a strategy, and then taking that strategy to market.
All right. So yeah, we have some similar kind of thoughts and directions, and we've known each other about a year now, or 2 years?
Yeah.
About two years. Wow. And so I think this will be really fun, what we've discussed. We did some pre-gaming before this show, because we wanted to come up with a strategy. But before we start that, I like to ask some questions of my guests. So the first one is, because you have a business and you're growing your business, what keeps you up at night thinking about that?
I would say the one thing that is probably on my mind the most is managing the sales and project funnel, right? Managing sales activities and managing the work itself. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a moving target, right? As the old saying goes, it's feast or famine, and just trying to keep enough business coming in and the projects going as they should is a challenge for me. It's always something that it's always on my mind.
Right. Well, I think in similar situations that, you know, that is the balance, right? How do you keep the pipeline full, business coming in, but as independents, we can max out our time pretty quick, and you can't ignore the sales pipeline, because eventually, as sometimes in marketing, and especially in the fractional world, those clients do end and go away as they bring on full-time people and things like that. So I'm along with you. I'm going to go back and forth as we banter back. But that is a similar challenge for me as well, is how do you keep the pipeline full? How do you do your networking? How do you keep things flowing, but also manage and make sure the work's getting done for the clients that we do have? The second question I like to ask is, what is the best business advice you've ever given and or received?
I'm going to quote you two pieces of advice I've been given. Okay. The first one, these go back early in my career, fresh out of graduate school, my first job. A gentleman by the name of Jose Luis Fornelli, who worked with Vitro down in Mexico. It's a glasswork conglomerate, and I was involved in a joint venture. And it was a simple piece of advice telling me that you can't be everything to everyone. Mm-hmm. And as simple as that sounded, it really focused me in on not trying to chase dollars, staying with my core competencies, and attracting and going after a specific niche. Not trying to just cover the entire waterfront, because it's just too challenging. There's too many audiences out there. You just need to stay with what you're good at as a corporation, and then focusing on that audience who really cares about what you have to offer. And then the second piece of advice came from Chris Lytle, who wrote The Accidental Salesperson, which is a book I'm very fond of, and I actually got a chance to talk with him on the phone. And that was that life is a lifelong learning seminar. Mm-hmm. And if you have that genuine curiosity, and you're learning from people around you, and you're learning from your experiences, you'll be a lifelong learner. And it just makes it perfect for a marketer, right? I'm trying to learn from everything I see around me.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, it really is true. It's, you know, we're not spring chickens, right? So there's been an evolution in marketing over the last 10 or 15 or 20 years, and not that we're that old, but we have to constantly be learning, because our clients aren't necessarily learning like we are to provide that counsel. And it becomes very confusing, I think, at times when you're talking to a client and they're saying, oh, I need to be on social media. Oh, okay, time out. Why? Oh, because. No, not because. I mean, I don't know about you, but one of the things I've seen so many times when I'm looking at a new client or looking at their competitors, one of the things I do is go to their social channels. And I would say, and I'm going to put a stake in the ground, 85% of the time, most of those channels are either not being used or being misused, right? I was on one the other day, and a client said, oh, yeah, we got to be on, I forget what it was, Facebook or something like that. And I looked, and it was like, you haven't posted since 2017. Why do we need to be on that channel? Right? Do you find that and similar when you're doing your work?
I do. And you really you hit the nail on the head in terms of social media. If their social media strategy is to push sales messaging, it's a waste of time. It's not developing a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's not developing engagement. Pick the channels you want to operate in effectively, and have something you want to say, and be willing to be a giving entity in the sense that you're going to provide content that has value, that you're not going to be boring. You're not going to be just pushing your sales messaging or your promotion of the week.
I think that's, and I think you might have said this already, funnel. And I think that that's where a lot of clients get a little confused, is about the funnel, right? I try to simplify the funnel. If we got too many layers, forget to, from awareness down to trial, it's just so many different steps they have to go through. And to get them to understand that education, right? You're not going to buy. So I have a client who is relatively unknown, and is like, "Why aren't people buying?" And my answer has been for months, because they don't know who you are. We have to build that process. We can't go from I launched today to making a gazillion dollars tomorrow.
Right. I often see people use the term, we want brand equity. I said, well, you don't have brand awareness yet. You don't have brand identity. You know, brand equity is up here, right? It's the brass ring you're going for, where someone says, I want your product versus somebody else's because of who you are. But to your point, if they don't know who you are and what you stand for, your brand equity is just out there in the distance. Right. You're not going to get it.
Right. So I want to segue a little bit and talk about brand awareness and brand equity. And for those of you that are watching this on video, you can see we have about 10% or 15% of this bottle is already gone. Aviation gin that Seth brought in, and I want you to tell a story a little bit about that and your relationship with this gin. And first of all, thank you for bringing it. I'm already almost done with my first glass. I will have at least two. My wife listened to a show with another brand recently, and I made a comment: "It sounds like I drink a lot," and I really don't. But we're drinking today. Why don't you talk about aviation?
Sure. So my brother-in-law actually works with Aviation Gin, and I mentioned I was going to be on the show, and he's very proud of the product. He's a big supporter of it. And for those who don't know, this is Ryan Reynolds' brand, and so I wanted to give a shout-out to Ryan and to my brother-in-law, Jim McCluskey. And it is a nice gin. It is a smooth gin. It is a gin that if you drink enough, you will think you're Wade Wilson, a.k.a. Deadpool. But please be warned that please don't do that, because if you cut off your arm, it will not grow back.
There you go.
So, it's a great product, and they've gotten some great publicity recently.
Right, with the Peloton ads.
Yeah.
That's it's brilliant. I love that. I've been reading some articles on it, and certainly had watched the original Peloton, and then of course the ad that Ryan put out, and it's just spectacular. It's really strategic. It's subtle but really funny. Yeah. If you really get into it, and I've seen it several times now. I do want to say I actually have some alcohol beverage experience. I've had an opportunity to work with some vodkas, some wines, and tequila. And I have to admit, this is really good. I'm not a big gin guy, but I could definitely see this going in my bar, because it's really smooth, and a lot of the florals that typically turn me away on a gin, this is really, really approachable and smooth. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's going in your bar now.
So. All right, well, there you go. Okay, no more. You can't have any more, Paul, because I'm taking the rest of it with me. All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you. And Ryan, you are invited to come on this show anytime. Call in 10 minutes just to talk about your gin. I love it. And we'll stay away from all the movie stuff. By the way, you got a new one out on Netflix today. I'm looking forward to watching it tonight. But let's talk gin. Let's talk alcoholic beverage. We talked about sharing some stories and some experiences. So let's start off by you know, something we might get some relevance from or some insights from, kind of a case study a little bit. And again, just remind ourselves, we only had about probably down to 20 minutes now or probably 15 minutes. And so I want to make sure we don't go too far down the rabbit hole because we got a lot of stuff I want to cover. But why don't we start off with a story, something that the audience can say, you know what, I learned something from that. I'll let you go first.
So are we talking war stories now, huh?
Talking war stories.
Okay. I'm going to start with a war story about a company that got it right. And they almost got it wrong. So this is a good one. Okay. Company was a computer hardware manufacturer. And at one point, one of their products, as a brand I was working with, one of their products started flying off the shelf. I mean, sales were just hockey sticking up. And it wasn't a terribly special product. It was one of our kind of more basic products. And manufacturing, the corporation got very excited and said, we've got to ramp up our production on this product. Look, we just can't keep them on the shelves. And this is a case where good business intelligence really helped out. I and my associates in sales said, you know what, before you add a second and third shift to manufacturing to bring in more product, give us a little time to figure out why all of a sudden this product is just spiking when it hadn't in the past. So a little undercover work. Some discreet interviews. We found out that one of our primary competitors was having a manufacturing issue on the part they had, the product they had that matched up against ours. So we were getting sales as a windfall because they could not produce.
Oh, okay.
And they were going to be back in stock and back in operating manufacturing in probably 60 to 90 days. So that very much changed our strategy. I said, okay, based on what we know here, let's do this. Let's bring in enough product. Let's increase our manufacturing. Let's increase our inventory enough that we can cover what we've got in orders. And let's identify every new customer we see coming in that we haven't seen before, and let's reach out to them. But we don't need to stock it to the gills, because had we done that, we might have ended up in a bad inventory position
Right. Once
our competitor was back in operating and manufacturing and producing that product again.
Right. Well, you said reach out to the customers and talk to them, and I find so many times that I'll be talking to a new prospect or a new customer, and it's like, well, when's the last time you actually talked to your customers? And it's like, well, I haven't for a while. So my war story is a custom software company. This was about a year and a half ago, and they wanted to re-entrench and change their sales trajectory. They were primarily getting their business through referrals, and now they needed to change that. Right? All that eggs in one basket, if the referral stopped coming in, and they were in trouble. So about a 30-year-old company, which was surprising. They were still in that situation. So one of the things that they did, a little kicking and screaming, is they got market insights. They allowed us to go out and do qualitative surveys with their customers, finding out all sorts of really good information. In fact, one of the things I learned in doing those interviews was that they were said, you know, if we got a tech problem and Becky's right there, man, she does a great job. And my question was, well, when's the last time you talked to somebody in management? Oh, it has to be a year or so. Matter of fact, you're the first person we've talked to from the company. So gathering that and then doing quantitative allowed us to really develop the strategies and hone on how they were going to talk to their, they had like five different vertical markets they were serving. So they did it right. It took them a long time, 30 years, to actually go out and talk to customers and talk to the marketplace. But they finally did it, and it really helped them in developing their strategies and moving their company and diversifying where the revenue was coming from. So potentially, you know, curbing any downturn in the market or a particular vertical having trouble. So that's my, they did it right. Your turn.
My turn. My second got it right was another example of one that could have gone south had they not done what they did. So this was an irrigation product company who had...
By the way, I saw that on your LinkedIn. I was looking at your resume.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did work for them about a few years earlier.
Oh.
Yeah. Did some research.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, irrigation product company. And for those engineers out there, you're going to know this term. They were value engineering a product. For those of you who don't know that term, value engineering is a term for when you ask your engineering design team to take cost out of a product. And sometimes it's a good thing, and sometimes it's a bad thing. In this case, they had value engineered a product into failure. So they had value engineered to the point where in certain climates, the product did not function properly. It was an outdoor sprinkler that would freeze up. So I was brought in as part of a team to look at what had happened and look at the reconciliation efforts and how they had replaced parts and changed the design, but also to look at how we were going to recover from this. So they took a very interesting approach in saying, do the research and then give us recommendations, and we'll move forward based on that. So here was an opportunity to go out and work with the marketplace again, get out there and get some customer insights, talk to the end users, talk to the contractors in the field, find out if the reconciliation, the recovery had been done properly, and then start a program, a marketing campaign to regain high ground. And we had some new products coming out that we wanted to promote. We wanted to talk to the recovery. So they put together a full marketing platform where we could, again, address the recovery properly and could promote these new products, and created a large campaign that got all of our distribution partners involved and got them really excited and re-energized about the brand. So once the recovery was done properly, it was really about, okay, we've said we're sorry. We fixed the problem. Mm-hmm. Now let's come out with some new products that we know you're going to love, and we're going to support, and we're going to be there for you.
All right. Fantastic. As a marketer, what do you think the biggest challenges are? I mean, I look at when I start working with a company that they have not developed personas. My favorite line of all times is, we don't have competition. They follow us. We're the leaders in the marketplace. And I've debated that over and over and over again with clients, that you have competition. I don't care if you're sitting out there by yourself. There's something else that is their perception is it can be filled by something else. So I see no competition, lack of market research. You know, I have a market research background. That is the kind of the thing I'm always kicking and screaming about, with really getting out there and talking to the marketplace. Certainly misunderstanding and usage of social media, and buyer personas. So those are kind of the things I see when I'm starting off, that I just feel that companies just don't have, and that's a challenge for them, even though they think they have it. I know job titles. Well, that's not a persona, right? So do you find similar things with the clients that you deal with, and are there some other perspectives that you want to offer?
Similar, but different terms. So my three top ones that I come out with over and over again is under-planning or no planning at all. They're just not spending enough time on their strategy. You know, they're out there, they're swinging, they're spending money, but okay, so what are the objectives here? Mm-hmm. What are you going after? So again, under-planning, no planning. That is the first one I see time and time again. The second one would be not setting success measures. So what does a success look like? What does a good campaign look like? And it's okay. It can be a soft goal. You can say, look, this is a hearts and minds campaign. We're just looking to get some positive PR here. Or it can be a sales number. But you need to set that number on the front end, not at the back end when you're looking at it and go, so was this a good campaign? Oh, yeah, we thought it was pretty good. Well, that's not really good enough. Mm-hmm. There needs to be some hard numbers, hard objectives and criteria that was set before you even launched. And then the third one is going to be, for me, post-campaign wrap-ups and codifying the lessons that have been learned. You're going to mess up. There are campaigns that are going to be less than optimal. It's going to happen. Sit down, do the post-mortem, talk about what worked, and talk about what was challenged, and learn from it, and codify that information. So next time around, you can take the pieces that work really well and use them again, and the pieces that were challenging, you can try a different way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, implementation is kind of the biggest challenge, and we can plan forever, but if it's poorly implemented, and the ability to have, I'll call it off ramps for lack of a better word, I can't think of another, maybe the gin's getting to me, but to be able to adjust as on the fly. I mean, with technology the way it is today, we should be able to change on a dime. I mean, literally on a dime. And I think that's important for companies to really pay attention to set those goals, whether they're soft goals, hard goals, whatever they happen to be, and really monitor them. I use a phrase people spend too much time working in their business than on their business. And so while we spend some time, you know, upfront planning, once we're in it, it's hard to get them to go back to the planning to see that things aren't working properly or set those goals. What is it? What is it going to be? So we can make adjustments as we go along. Right.
Your generals need to be generals and maintain that position of being overlooking the battlefield, not because they want to hop in the trenches with everybody else and just get into the work. To your point, they're working in their business and not on it.
Right. So tell me a story where it doesn't have to be your story, but a story that didn't go quite as planned.
Actually, I have a story for you that is my story, so I'm going to take full credit for this mess up.
All right.
It's mine.
Do I need another drink for that?
You might.
Well, you know what? I'm going to pour myself a one. How you doing over there, Paul? You ready for another? All right. I'm just going to go straight on this one.
You going straight?
I'm going straight.
If you want tonic water, let me know.
I'm good.
Okay. So, first job out of graduate school. I'm pretty sure my shoes were still squeaking at that point. First job out of graduate school. And
what school?
Oh, what school? So out of graduate school was George Washington University. That's where I got my master's in international studies.
We plug in universities now?
Undergrad was USC, George Washington for grad school. So first job out of school, living in Wallingford, Connecticut, working in Wallingford, Connecticut. Chasing dollars. So I was working on a line of imported glassware coming in from Mexico. And I was working with a tableware company at the time. They'd done tableware in the past, so plates and dishes and utensils, flatware, going into hospitality, restaurants, country clubs. And they were just getting into glassware products for that commercial use. And I decided to initiate a special order program. So we had standard stocking items that we had in the warehouse, and I had heard about customers and talking to them and some of the distribution partners. We'd love this other item that you have that you don't have in stock. I thought, okay, we can do a special order program, getting product from Mexico to the U.S. to the customer. And it was an absolute nightmare. Sales didn't like it. Marketing turns out, and I didn't like it, and it just didn't work for distribution or logistics. So special order means you don't have it in stock. You've got to bring it in. You've got to handle it. It's got to be handled. It's just outside your core competencies, and it was such a learning lesson for me of don't chase dollars. Stay with what you do. Stay with what you have in stock, right, instead of trying to bring stuff in south of the border and cross it in time and get it to the customer and make sure the paperwork's right. It was a screw-up. That I tried to learn from.
Well, we learned from those screw-ups. Hopefully they happen earlier in our careers than later in our careers, but that's how we learn. I tell the story that my first business as an entrepreneur, I was 23. And I was in the film business, and I started a production company here in Orange County, and my partners were at least 20 years older than me, and they convinced me we could bring L.A. Hollywood to Orange County. And I was full of, you know what, piss and vinegar, and I thought it could happen. Well, it didn't. As a matter of fact, almost all our work, actually all our work, was in Los Angeles. So it just didn't work, and it was in and out in 8 months. But horrible, you know, from a marketing standpoint, positioning, and I didn't know enough at that point in time. But that one lesson, which was expensive, I learned a tremendous amount, and so I'm glad that happened earlier on. I call and so allowed me 7 years later to step out and start the new one. Another one, just a real simple one. I was working on a campaign for an air freight company, and they were converting themselves to an overnight company, going to compete with FedEx and UPS. And so we created this campaign. And it was fantastic. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. And the campaign launched and nothing. Phone didn't ring. And then all of a sudden we started getting calls. Your phone's disconnected. It's like, what? And so what happened is nobody ever actually called the phone number. So this is a lesson out there. If you put a phone number in an ad or a post or anything else, make sure you call it first that it's still working. What had happened is somebody on the other side of the building in accounting was looking at their receipts and said, these numbers haven't been used in years. I'm going to cancel them. Literally in the same week that the campaign broke. So it was a simple story. It was a disaster. We recovered quickly. We were able to get the same number back. But just a simple lesson that, you know, that was a scary moment because it was a huge campaign, and it was pretty crazy. Wow, we're down to 2 minutes. Unbelievable. Wow. All right, so let's segue. What do you think the biggest challenges are for companies in 2020? We're probably, what, 15 days away, something like that?
It's definitely going to be understanding your clients, right? Things are moving so fast. What your client wants, how they want to be communicated with, whether it's going to be Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, really understanding their needs. So this comes back to your area of expertise, which is market research. And when I say market research, I think some people, oh, market research, I need somebody in a white lab coat. No, you don't. It can be informally done. You can do what are called store intercepts, where you walk up to a potential client, you've got gift cards in your hand. But know, understand your clients, spend the time, because it is, if you don't think it's a moving target out there, you're not looking closely enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that plug, because I talk about it all the time. I mean, that's one thing that I use as a tool, and I call it grandmother research. You just got to stick your toe in the water. You know, it's really simple. It's really easy. It doesn't have to be really expensive and complicated. Just get out of the boardroom. There's a story I've told before on this about Vizio and the 3D TV. I don't know if you know that. So basically, long story short, they raced to the market, Panasonic, Sony, Vizio won. Product took off. Within a few years, product failed. Why? Consumers didn't want to wear the glasses.
Right.
They never actually asked a question to anybody. And the story goes, it was brought up in the conference room, and they dismissed it. So, and I've got a bunch of those. But, you know, if you get out of your own room and talk to somebody else, I've had a client over the years who just insists that he is the target market. He's not. He's like 40 years older than the target consumer. But he keeps... And trying to say, I'm the guy, I understand, I know how it works. Well, you don't. You're never going to buy this product. It's your product, but you're never going to buy it, right? So as we wrap up here, and man, this went by really quick. This show's about business. Today we're talking marketing. Give the audience a couple tips as they go into 2020 or in general when they come to thinking about their marketing programs.
I'll give you one big tip.
Okay.
Okay. And this I tell to my clients.
Don't get into marketing.
Yeah. You need to become comfortable being uncomfortable. So if you're going to be doing marketing, if you're getting out there and promoting your product or service, you're not going to be exactly sure what's going to work. There are going to be campaigns that you're going to swear up and down, this is going to hit, and it doesn't. And there are going to be other campaigns where you think, yeah, I'm going to give it a shot, but I'm not sure about this, and it's going to hit. Become uncomfortable being uncomfortable, trying things, having that genuine curiosity, talking to your customers. It's where the game is. It's where the battle will be won and lost.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's great. I mean, part of it is taking that first step. For me, it's about it's about persistence and patience, right? Stay the course, lay the plan, follow it. Consistency, determine your strategies up front before you run to the tactics. I'm sure you get the same situation. Hello, phone rings. Hello, can I help you? Yeah, I need a brochure. I need a website. I need a social media post. Well, you're talking to the wrong person. What's your strategy? What's your message? You mentioned that earlier on. And I think that's really important. If I could give one piece of advice to you listeners out there, is move it up the channel. Look at your strategies. What are you trying to accomplish? What are the outcomes you're trying to achieve? Then start talking about the tactical things to accomplish that, right? Thank you so much. This has been great. Thank you, Ryan Reynolds. This aviation gin is fantastic. Seth, why don't you tell the audience how they can reach you and all that good stuff, your LinkedIn, your website, and all those wonderful things.
Sure. Easiest way to reach me is either via LinkedIn or via my website. So it's Avergon Marketing. That's A as in Alpha, V as in Victory, E-R-G-O, N as in November.
You practice that, right?
I practice that a lot.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for listeners out there joining us at the cafe today. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, view my show videos at theponzigroup.com, or the best way to reach me is on LinkedIn. And if your business is ready for growth and you need a full-time, and you need a CMO, but you're not quite ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd welcome the opportunity to explore the benefits of using a fractional CMO. And lastly, please subscribe. And if you're already a subscriber, I encourage you to invite others to become subscribers so they can benefit from this great content we had today with Seth. And you can find out more about that at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com or subscribe to any of your major podcast platforms around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.